Hey there. Welcome to the Mile High Church podcast. Classes are starting at Mile High. Take advantage of this unique opportunity to transform your life. Visit milehighchurch.org for details. And now, Evolved Compassion with Michelle Medrano.
We're continuing our Back to Basics. Indeed, today is the final day of our four-week series. I just love that we join Centers for Spiritual Living all over the world at the first part of January to really take a look, a re-look for many of us, a re-examination of the basic teachings that we have here in our community, and an opportunity to practice them and to inspire ourselves to live them out more fully. And so our theme this year has been evolved spirituality. And so it's an opportunity to continue to evolve and grow. And we've had some amazing messages. I've really loved doing the series. And Josh and I have also continued it on Wednesday night. So we've had a great opportunity to really, really go deep with this. And today we conclude with a conversation about compassion, evolved compassion. No one and no place not worthy of your compassion. That's a big call. That's a big call. It's been quite a week. You know, the events of January have certainly called us to practice our teachings profoundly and powerfully at the beginning of the month with a mob rioting on our Capitol, and then on January 20th this past week, the inauguration of a new president and vice president, and with all of that, a change in leadership. And I'm a firm believer that in this universe, nothing and no one is all good or all bad, that there are pros and cons to every leadership that comes forth and every leadership that goes away, and there are pros and cons to what's about to happen. And so that helps me stay more compassionate and more centered and more aware that that no matter how I feel about what has been going on, that I can stay in my center and bless what's happening. And so I invite us to do that, to immediately start out the gate here with an invitation to practice compassion. And I think that this is a very powerful, powerful topic, one of the most important topics of our life, our lives collectively and our life individually. That a being who can actually live a compassionate life ushers in great things for themselves, for their own heart, for their own karmic expression of life, and for the life that they live as they share it with every other human being on this planet. Compassion and the ability to be compassionate is so powerful. And my unhidden agenda today, it literally is unhidden, is to convince anyone who is listening today or any day that you hear this message, whether it's years from now as people tune back into these messages, to convince anyone who hears this message to choose a life of greater compassion. That also means then to choose a life of being willing to do the work, to surrender up things like resentment and judgment and frustration and anger and piss-osity, and to be willing to make a commitment to that degree such that when those feelings and thoughts arise, and they will because we are human and in our human experience we will have those moments, but that we will use those moments then to call ourselves back to what must I become, how must I be in this life that I am living as a more compassionate member of humanity. What has to happen in me now? To use those thoughts and feelings as a marker to say, okay, I've lost touch with my compassion. How can I step back into that? And I want to talk today about that powerfully. Dr. Fred Vogt, who used to be the senior minister here for many years and was the senior minister when I arrived, used to say to us as I was sitting in the pews on Sunday mornings, if we were hauled into court and convicted of being a religious scientist, would there be enough evidence to convict us? And I always thought that was a very compelling question for me as one who practices this faith. But today I offer that and also add to it, for those of us who say we are these spiritual beings, that we're all about love and compassion, If we were hauled into court today and convicted of being a compassionate being, would there be enough evidence to convict us? And in this case, I'm not talking just about the evidence that might show up in how we behave and what we say outside of ourselves. What if the play-by-play occurred of the interior life that we lead, what we think and how we really feel about people and the thoughts that we're really lobbing towards them? Would there be enough evidence to convict us as being a compassionate contribution to humanity? And if so, great. And if not, what needs to happen within us for us to move forward in greater compassion? How could we possibly do that? And so in the climate of our world right now, with the swirling opinions and judgments about what's happening and not happening or what should be happening, we can easily be tempted into judgment and anger and a rise in energy quickly. And so I feel that our teaching offers basic ideas that are profound and deep, that can lead us through times like this when there are so many issues that we're all looking at with our health and this pandemic and this new change in leadership and all the things that are going on in the world around injustice and racial equity and all the things that we want to solve together require us to actually grab onto deep, profound compassion and be able to see through the eyes of compassion. And I think it all starts with a willingness for us to take a look at what keeps us from being compassionate. What is our overall cosmology about the universe and the world of blame and justice and right and wrong? And so I wanted to start out today by challenging us to consider where we live in our cosmology with regards to God's authority. Now, I know I was raised, as many people have been, in faith traditions that continued to encourage in me the belief that God was this being out there and God was keeping track of me and everyone else. And to trust in God's authority. And what that meant then was that God had the handle on what was good and what was bad. And I was presented options in the world from that religious viewpoint of what was good for me to do and what was bad for me to do. What would land me ultimately in heaven and what might land me ultimately in hell. I was also told that because God was keeping track of everything and was judging everything, that God was keeping track of the bad guys and the bad gals and was making sure that anyone who was bad was going to experience proper justice from that and ultimately could end up in that place they didn't want to be, which was hell. And so I came into this world believing that. And then we also had the authoritative issues that showed up with parenting and with schooling and with societal issues and societal mores and a constant barrage telling us that we needed to behave, we needed to be good, we needed to do all these things that would make us be a good person. And a part of us constantly knowing that there were consequences in this human realm for behaviors, and yet always hoping that God's authority was such that, you know, God's going to get them for that. God's going to get them for that. And this energy would sometimes flood my being with, well, I can't do anything about how bad that person is over there, but I know God's going to get them. And kind of this hope that God's authority would ultimately reign. Then I started noticing some things. I don't know if you've noticed, but sometimes people whom I deem to be quite bad seem to be living a pretty good life. And then I noticed, gosh, some people who are really sweet and kind and good people, they suffer and they struggle and sometimes they even die way too early, and that doesn't make any sense. If God's got authority, why would God do that to the good people and appear to even reward the bad people with the littlest bit of good? How can that possibly be so? And I remember that at a very early age, I began to not trust God at all. I thought, well, if God's playing like this, God must be not seeing things right. Maybe he's off his game. I don't know. Something's just not right with this at all. And so my lack of trust caused me then to want to lean into the authority that I felt was important. I began to, in my own mind, essentially play God. By playing God, then I get to decide that person's bad, that person's good. That person should be rewarded. That person should be punished. And if, especially if someone hurt me, broke my heart, betrayed me, harmed me, or someone that I loved and cared for, then my playing God got real strong. Boy, I wanted to punish them, and I wanted to punish them with my words and sometimes my actions, and I wanted to make sure that they suffered equally in the way that they had caused me or someone I cared for to suffer. And so I began to think that my job then as a human being was to completely usurp God's authority and to become the authority myself. And, you know, that just didn't work very well for me. I don't feel good like that. I don't feel connected when I'm doing that. I don't feel happy when I'm doing that. I don't think that's my job. And this teaching began to show me, I don't think that's God's job. I think we got it a little wrong in this regard. If we're continuing to believe that part of why we struggle with having compassion is because we're trying really hard to play the authority, we're going to miss out on the opportunity to have compassion. And so it's important for us to understand that as Josh has said, I think a couple of times this month, he's pointed us to the reality that we believe here that God is love and law, meaning that God is this ultimate love that welcomes all. Yep, all. All, including those ones we don't like, including those ones who've hurt me and hurt people I love. A love that's all-encompassing, an unconditional love that embraces all. And indeed, in our teaching, we don't believe that there is a heaven that we go to when we die or a hell that we go to when we die. Because our belief in this all-encompassing love that transcends that authority, that's the number one authority of God, is to love and accept all. We don't believe in these places that we have to banish people to or reward people to. In fact, Ernest Holmes described these concepts that heaven was any moment that we felt at one-ment in and as the divine. And conversely, hell was any moment we felt completely separate from the divine. That these were states of mind that we could experience any time, in any moment. And so I began with this teaching to contemplate the possibility that God's authority wasn't available to punish people or reward people, but simply to love people. And that is mind-boggling. Recently, I was actually paying attention to a movie that was a book. And the author was William P. Young, and the book was a phenomenal best-selling book called The Shack. And they made it into a movie, and I was at home during the holidays having a little quiet time, and I was flipping through channels, and all of a sudden, here came the movie. Now, I've seen the movie before, and it definitely had an impact on me, but this particular day, as I was contemplating my life and the universe and what was going on in the world and contemplating this beginning of the year, there was a particular scene that really hit me hard. In this movie, this book, in the story, there's a family, a man, a woman, mom and dad, and three children. And they go on about the story. The mother is very spiritual. She is very connected to God. She calls God Papa and feels a connection. And the father, so-so. And in this particular weekend, the father takes the three children to go camping. Mother has something else she has to do. And while they're camping, the two older children are on a boat out in the lake, and they have a little accident. And the father leaves their smallest girl and rushes off to go rescue his older children. And when they come back, the smallest girl, the youngest, she's gone. She's clearly been abducted And eventually they discover that she was actually murdered. And this becomes, of course, naturally a torturous experience for the family in every way, shape, or form to lose their little child this way. The sister feels responsible for it because she was goofing around in the boat and that's why they had the accident. And the father feels horrible responsibility for it. And he's furious, which is completely understandable. He's furious. He's furious at God, at Papa, and he's furious at this man who took his daughter and murdered her in this shack. And he's lost his sense of life and living. His resentment and anger is eating him alive. And he begins to get these notes in the mail. His family's gone off and left him home alone, and these notes are showing up in the mail with invitations to come to the shack from Papa. And he doesn't understand this at all. How is this possible? And so one winter day, he heads up to this shack. And the story unfolds with him having this amazing experience with God and Jesus and the Holy Spirit and the way that the author sees them. And it's very moving and touching. But the part that really touched me that is in relationship to what I'm talking about today is that there's this moment where they send him off to go be with a being who calls herself Wisdom. And Wisdom is trying to impart to him the love that God, that Papa has for every being. And he can't get it. He can't get it because he hates God for what happened and he hates the man who did this horrible act. And so Wisdom says to him, okay then, how about this? And she puts images of this man's children who are still alive before him and says, if you feel that this is what God's authority is, she doesn't say it that way, those are my words, then I challenge you to choose which of your children you're going to send to hell. And he says, I couldn't send one of my kids to hell. And she says, well, I don't know. You know, your daughter is so disconnected. She doesn't even love you anymore. She doesn't treat you very well. She's done some pretty bad things that you don't even know about. And your son, he's, you know, I know you love him, but he's been doing these things. He's been sneaking out at night and you don't even realize it. And so they haven't been the best children. I think you need to send one of them to hell. Which one will it be? And he's just shocked by this. He says, I can't do it. I cannot send one of my children to hell. No, I won't. And then he has a softening moment and he says, send me. Send me instead. I'll go. I'll go in their place, but don't send my children to hell. And in that moment of softening, Wisdom looks at you and says, now you know how Papa feels. Now you know how God feels. God could no more send any of its children to hell than you can as a father. And that moment in that movie completely shattered me in every way. Because I'll tell you the truth, the names and faces of people that I feel, even though I don't believe in hell, I don't believe that there is a place that we go to be tortured for the rest of our existence. I don't even believe in that place. Our teaching doesn't believe in that place. But in my heart, I hesitate to admit that there were people that if there was a place like that, I think they should go. They should be sent. And their faces came into my heart and into my mind, and I cried with the stinging awareness that this presence that is God that I believe in with every fiber of my being could no more send any of its children to hell than I could send my own child. And that's impossible. It's impossible for the infinite presence that created each one of us to have that kind of authority over us. The only authority it has over us is that of love. It bathes us in and as love. It loves and accepts us even when we've done things that we wish we hadn't. Even humans who've done things we can barely begin to imagine. Its love is pure. It also is law. Law that is not punishment, like, well, you're going to get yours, like my human heart sometimes wants to go to, but law that is consequence. consequence that happens, natural consequences. They say in this movie over and over and over again, no one ever really gets away with anything. Not you, not me. No one ever really gets away with anything when we're out of integrity, when we lie, when we hurt someone, when we act out in anger, when we lash out, even in our mind, when we're constantly judging and sending lobs of resentment and anger towards people. You know, the thing is, we aren't really hurting them. We're hurting ourselves. And so there is consequence for every choice. And the hardest part in this dance of the authority of the universe, the authority of God, is that sometimes we don't get to see the results of it. So what is our choice then? What is our authority? Our choice is to step into love. Now, one of the things that I love about this idea is that that means that we're all connected in this love that God is. There's an author that Reverend Carroll turned me on to recently, Valerie Carr, who wrote a book called See No Stranger. And she says, what has been an ancient spiritual truth is now increasingly verified by science. We are all indivisibly part of one another. We share a common ancestry with everyone and everything alive on earth. The air we breathe contains atoms that have passed through the lungs of ancestors long dead. Our bodies are composed of the same elements created deep inside furnaces of long dead stars. We can look upon the face of anyone or anything around us and say, as a moral declaration and a spiritual, cosmological, and biological fact, you are a part of me I do not yet know. You are a part of me I do not yet know. Because we are an expression of the divine. So our authority is not to condemn or to uplift or to make right or to make wrong. Our authority is to do our best to take on this energy that God is, to find our way again and again and again and yet again back into our compassionate heart, our loving heart, so that we duplicate the nature of God and we experience that sense of being the living presence, of ushering forth the kingdom of heaven through us and as us. I have loved over the years quoting Carolyn Mays, who's usually attributed with this quote most often, that resentment is like drinking poison and hoping the other person dies. Withholding our compassion is like drinking poison and hoping the other person dies. Yes, we have laws and we have rules and we have agreements and we have social mores that show up in our world, in our culture, in our country, even in our neighborhood where we live. But they are choices that we make to abide by, and we understand that we can have boundaries and say, this is what we tend to do here, this works for here, and we don't harm each other and we do no harm. And we speak kindly and we think kindly and we do our personal growth work. That's my boundary. I do my work so that I can learn to love every human that has ever been or will ever be. I do my work. I do my part. I make a contribution because I know it serves me and it serves our whole human experience if we think we're ever going to experience that kingdom of heaven. That's what we have to do. There's a distinction between judging, which comes with resentment and negativity and make wrong, and boundaries, which have to do with, yes, this is the agreement that we agree to adhere to, and there will be consequences if the agreements are broken. But we do so with love and joy because we understand that how we do anything comes back into our experience. Ernest Holmes puts it very clearly this way. He says, we can have no understanding of divine compassion unless we ourselves first exercise compassion. The very judgment by which we judge others becomes self-judgment. It is as if the law of life were giving back to each one of us exactly what we have projected into it. As though everything that goes out from us must again return by a law of action and reaction. So our authority, despite the notion we have at times that we get to decide who's right and wrong and we can be very judgy, our authority, that's not our authority. Our authority is to be more like God, to be anchored in that love, and to recognize that there is law, and that sometimes the law that shows up in people's lives around consequences will be something we will never see or never understand. But to come back into trust, a trust of the universe, a trust of life, a trust of each other, and a compassion for each other. And so I would say that compassion is the way. Compassion is the way back into the kingdom. Compassion is the way back into love. Compassion is the way that we march forward arm in arm together as one human family. Compassion is that doorway. And so I'm inviting us into very sacred practices this week of compassion. To talk about it, to think about it, to pray on it, to meditate on it, but also some clear, distinct actions. To take our authority to be a compassionate being of love and understand this is the way. So some options include, think of someone that we have profound judgment about. And do some research on them. Find some common ground. Put yourself in their shoes. I'll tell you, I became so compassionate about my parents and their actions or non-actions once I became a parent. Once I walked in those shoes of being a parent, I was like, oh, yeah, I get it. This can be hard sometimes. It's hard to know what to do. It's hard to know how to do it. It's hard to know how to take care of your children in a way that you can love them and lift them up, but teach them along the way. Oh, this is hard. This is hard. And I remember a wall just falling down of my upset and resentment about things that I had held on to for years, because it was just like, let it go, Michelle. Just let it go. So sometimes walking in another's shoes, and I've found that as I've witnessed people in the public eye that I have judgment about and want to make wrong, that I've got strong energy about, that resentment is poisonous to my own soul. So to go and find out more about them, to read things about them that I might not otherwise read, to understand what their needs might be, what their motivations might be, what might be calling them to behave that way, how they might be serving humanity and some of the choices they're making, has served me to find my compassionate heart. I think practicing the practice of watching my judgmental thoughts and challenging myself to say every time I have a judgmental thought, I have to challenge myself back into my compassionate heart for at least as long, if not longer, than I was spending being judgmental, to take some time to just find compassion and breathe into compassion. To find prayers that are all about compassion. Prayers like the Buddhist loving kindness prayer that includes words like, may all beings be filled with loving kindness. May all beings be free from suffering. May all beings be well. And to pray that prayer when I find myself really in that space where I've lost my ability to be compassionate. I also love Ho'oponopono, which is a beautiful practice where we can take people into our consciousness and just send them energy, just saying, I'm sorry. And the I'm sorry is, I'm sorry for judging you. Please forgive me for judging you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. And saying that over and over to restore the energetic connection, because that's what it's all about. The consciousness of love and compassion going forth. And lastly, to do that for myself, to have self-compassion, to treat myself with kindness and love. Jack Kornfield, a beautiful teacher of meditation, reminds us that if your compassion does not include yourself, it is incomplete. So we must have the same kind of compassion that we have for other people, and sometimes even more. Speak to ourselves like we would the most beloved being in our life, like we would a child we love and revere. For gosh sake, speak to ourselves like we do our beloved pets. I always find it fascinating in the realm of human behavior that someone will be like their dog or cat will do the most heinous, horrible behavior and thing that they've got to clean up, and the human will be like, oh, Fluffy, it's okay, Fluffy, I'll take care of it, don't worry about it. And then the server forgets to bring them their french fries and there's all hell breaks loose. Talk to yourself like you're talking to your favorite pet, a pet you love and adore. Those inner thoughts, self-compassion, important for us to love and honor ourselves. Bottom line, For the divine, there is no one and no thing, no place that is not worthy of its love and compassion. Bottom line, for us human beings, we will find ourselves happiest, most fulfilled, a greater contribution to humanity, and ushering forth the kingdom of heaven to the degree that we can be like God and duplicate its nature. Lastly, the great Parker Palmer, so wise, says, "Wholeness does not mean perfection. It means embracing brokenness as an integral part of life. Knowing this gives me hope that human wholeness, mine, yours, ours, need not be a utopian dream if we can use devastation as a seedbed for new life." Let's do that. Bring forth our compassion. Let's pray a prayer of compassion this day as we breathe in the very breath of life and allow ourselves to just settle into this space, breathing love and joy and peace, breathing wholeness, breathing God. Joining me in recognizing that the infinite presence is this divine love. It is this beautiful alchemy of love and law in every moment of its being. That this love embraces all, includes all, is all. That there is only this. No matter who we see, what actions we see taking place, what we see in the mirror, what we see in our own life, in this life we share, all of it is God in some form. Beings using the creative expression of the divine to fulfill their creative nature. And yes, some of it is magnificent and beautiful, and some of it is not. It's the complete opposite. And yet, God so loves this world, this universe itself, that it allows the full freedom of expression. And we stand together as a human race, continuing to clarify the agreements upon which we choose to live and move and have our being, such that peace reigns supreme and love reigns supreme. And in that process, let us not forget that the compassion and love that God embraces us in and as, that we let unleashed upon the world. That as we continue to clarify and move forward in our world, in all of its beauty and grace and in all of its brokenness, we continue to remain compassionate, loving beings, trusting in life and each other to walk forward in this journey in oneness and wholeness. We take back our own authority to feel the compassionate love of God in and as everything and to express it fully this day. We take back that authority to recognize that all beings already reside in the kingdom of heaven. We breathe that in, and we extend it now joyously as we take a moment to allow ourselves to look upon any faces of beings that we have withheld our compassion from lately. Maybe the beings who are right next to us right now, or in our household, in our family, extended family, our family of choice, our family of origin, in the family of humanity. And we just allow ourselves to feel our compassionate nature returning to our heart, returning to our light, returning to our words, returning to our thoughts, being the way in which we live, move, and have our being on this planet. I'm so grateful to see this and witness this now for myself and all others who hear this prayer. I'm so grateful that this is the truth of us in this very moment. I breathe it in and I let it go in great gratitude and faith and trust that this is so right here and right now. Therefore, I release this prayer, letting it be, knowing that as it has been spoken, it indeed is done. I trust in the word, I trust in the law, and so it is. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Mile High Church podcast. This podcast is made possible by the generous contributions from listeners like you. If you'd like to make a donation, please visit us at milehighchurch.org. Have a fabulous day.